All right. And there's Carol back there. Okay, very good. Glad that all of you are here today. Happy New Year to the Zoomers as well. All right. Today, I want to talk about this incident with you where Jesus stayed back and his parents didn't know where he was. I thought that was a very interesting incident in the life of Jesus. And it reminded me of a time when our family was young where we lost track of our youngest for about 15 minutes. And that was a very anxious time for us. We were looking all around and driving around, didn't know where it was. And of course, you know, there she was, but she wanted to know what was going on. How come you didn't know where I was? I think we convinced her that it was all right, but well, I can check with her later, I'm sure it's fine. She's 38 now, now compared to Jesus, did you catch how long Jesus was missing? 5 days. Right. 1 day out. 1 day back. 3 days looking around. Five. And his parents, it says, were very anxious. It's one of those biblical understatements. But did you notice Jesus, however, was not very anxious? I guess he was 12. You know, maybe you could expect that, maybe not. I don't know, but there he was. So here he is as a boy in the temple, and they go up to Jerusalem. The family goes to Jerusalem every year on a pilgrimage. This year, Jesus was 12, so it was his entrance as a Jewish male into the religious community. It's like a bar mitzvah today. You know, that was the occasion here. So he spent time with the teachers in the temple, and apparently a good time was had by all for 5 days. there they were, back and forth, and Jesus is, you know, the star of the show, as he would be. So Mary and Joseph finally find him, and of course Mary speaks up. Now Eugene Peterson in The Message translates this very differently. If you can get a hold of a copy of The Message for your own Bible reading, I think you'll find it to be very, very helpful and very enriching. So this verse, Luke 2:49, he translates this way. This is Mary's response after they find Jesus. "Young man, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been half out of our minds looking for you." Now, wouldn't you think that's a little more probably what happened? Probably, yeah. Now, Jesus' response, very interesting. Most 12-year-olds would probably have known at this point that they were in big trouble. By the time you get to be 12, you would have been in trouble enough to know what trouble was. And there he was. And most 12-year-olds would have had some kind of reaction to show that they knew that that's what was going on here, that they were in big trouble. But Jesus had no such reaction. He says, "Now why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house?" Anybody start singing, "Mary, did you know?" in your mind? Of course they knew that. They knew the whole thing, but they were still very anxious. They knew all the stuff that was going to happen just from the time Gabriel announced to Mary, "This is what's going to happen." All the stuff that happened with Jesus still would have bowled them over, but they knew that it was going to happen. So Mary and Joseph had a further response. They accepted that answer of Jesus. There is no going back to him. No, don't talk to us like that. No, what's the matter with you? None of that goes on. They accepted the answer, and Mary went further and says she treasured all these things in her heart. Can you imagine that? Your child is gone for 5 days. You have no idea where they are. You're looking all over for them, and you treasure all these things in your heart. But Mary did. So they brought him home, and they lived and they worked together for the next 18 years until he went off into public ministry, just learning the business of the house that Joseph had. Says he was a carpenter. He was probably more than that, probably a builder, a contractor. And that's what they did. Now, I think what's important to keep in mind here is the idea of a house, a household. And what we usually think of as a household is our house, and we live in it. And if we're not on our own in our house, there's a family. There's a spouse and maybe some kids. And that's a house. And the house is the place that during your working years, you leave work and you go to your house. And if all goes well, you don't get to bring work home to your house. That's the expectation. Now, of course, that's changing culturally a bit where there's people remotely working. But nonetheless, that's still the ideal. That's the picture we have of what a house is. That was not the picture of what a house is in the time of Jesus. In the time of Jesus, a house was a place of business, and it was also the place where you lived. And it is very likely that there would be several generations in that house, and perhaps even cousins and who knows who else in the house. It is a big house. And it was the economic engine of that culture, where you would have a business out of your house and make money and relate to people in the community and all kinds of other things that went on. You can see that all through the New Testament. One example from the book of Acts is when Paul went to Philippi. There was Lydia, who had she was a seller of purple, it says, you know, purple fabric, and you made a lot of money that way. And she did it out of her house, and there was a lot of people in that house. And Paul went to that house. Lydia invited him. And out of that house, the Christian faith spread through Philippi. It was the first proclamation of the gospel in Europe, in a house like that. The Greek word is oikos. These days, we usually think that's yogurt. But it's more than that. Oikos, it's where we get our word ecumenical. It's where the church was born, in a house like that. And Jesus is saying, I need to be in my Father's house. Now, you might remember the story from the past if you come across it yourself or heard it read in other places, other times, that Jesus said, I need to be about my Father's business. Now, when we read that, we think, oh, okay, because we separate house from business most of the time. And even if we don't, culturally, that's what happens. But in Jesus' day, to say I must be about my Father's business or I must be my Father's house, they were the same thing, the very same thing. And they can mean the same thing for us in our relationship with God, in the way that we follow Jesus. We can be in our Father's house while we are in our house. We can be about our Father's business while we are about our business. And the idea is this. Wherever we are, there is God. All the time, every time. And we've talked about that from time to time. Maybe a lot. And when you are in your house, you are also in God's house. And when you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you are also doing what God would have you do. The two overlap. Our culture has taught us to compartmentalize these so much that feels weird. That feels, I got to do my business. I got to do my work. I got to do what I'm supposed to do. So I can't do this religious stuff while I'm doing that. That's a normal thing that a lot of people would hold. And what I'm suggesting to you from what Jesus said to his parents after being gone for 5 days at the age of 12 is they completely overlap. And to follow Jesus is to be about what God wants you to be about in everything you do. All the time. Now, I know that's hard. I know that's hard to do. It takes the power of the Spirit. So you do. You ask for the power of the Spirit to do that. And what you do is you take up the habits of connecting to God wherever you are. And I'm not suggesting that the habits are you get up in the morning and say, I'm just an awful sinner and I need to be corrected. I would suggest you not do that. I would suggest you get up and maybe say something like Mary says. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. Maybe start the day that way and make that a habit. And that habit will connect you to the presence of God that's right there anyway. It opens you up to that. And there's many, many other habits that we could take on like that. In fact, for a New Year's resolution, I think that's an excellent suggestion if you haven't thought of any yet. Or if you're thinking your New Year's resolution is to lose weight or walk 10,000 steps or whatever it is, you might want to replace those with this one. It might be a little less frustrating next week if you make it that far. Oh, my. All right. Well, you get the idea. What we are about in everything we do, in our work, in what we do around our house, all of it, our relationships, all of it is to be learning God's business in that work and in those relationships and in everything we do. Just as Jesus was about his Father's business when he was in Joseph's house, learning that business, getting those habits. Very powerful way to go. And it doesn't mean that if you are taking up a what you might call a contemplative habit, where you are connecting with Jesus all the time, it doesn't mean that you have to take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience and go be a hermit. It means you live the life that God has placed you in, and you keep connecting to God by the habits that you have in that life. Now, what happens, as will happen in households, is that various things will come up from out of your soul. Various things that have kept us from, connecting to God, wanting to do things our way. Maybe you're thinking of a few now that you have. And they will surface. And then comes the challenge. What would God have me do to take care of this habit I have according to his business? For example, call to your mind right now something that really presses your buttons. Anybody need a minute? Okay, you got something that presses your buttons. When that happens, it drives you nuts. You don't want to hear about it. whatever it is. What's the Father's business when that button is pushed? Now, probably don't know. I mean, when stuff pushes my buttons, I don't know what's the Father's business here. What I need to do at that point is develop a habit that connects me to the presence of God, not get an answer about what is the business of God. Do you see the difference? If I want to get an answer about what's the business of God, I press my buttons, I shouldn't be doing, what's the right thing to do, I need the answer, what's going on, I will slip into making my own plan to see what the business of God is. And what I need to do is to connect to the presence of God. And they are two different things. And if I connect to the presence of God, I may not get a plan for what to do next time. What may happen to me is that my soul and my heart may be more transformed into the likeness of Jesus, so that the next time that button is pushed, my reaction is more like the reaction of Jesus than it is of John. That's what it is to live in a house. When you live in a house, you get the habits of that house. Right? If you can't see what they are, just ask the person you're married to. You know, do you see what happened when you were growing up? There's habits that we get in a house. What we want are the habits of the house of God, so that we can move in a way that we follow Jesus. Now, I'm not suggesting that you should never get any answers about questions of the faith or questions of how to follow Jesus. They are very, very important. But when the challenge is right there in front of us, what we do is we die to the desire to have our own answer and rise to the life of connecting to Jesus. Now, that can be hard to do. And it sounds like that's spiritually deep. But I have a suggestion for how you might do it. If you can, when your button's pushed, say to yourself, "Where are you, God? And God will answer that. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you, it says in James. God is right there ready to answer that. Now, the temptation, I know, is going to be, "God, will you please fix this person who is doing this thing?" But the dying to that and rising to new life, say, "God, where are you? Can I be with you now?" And maybe the thing won't dissipate right away. Maybe it'll take a long time. But what you and I want to get to is having our heart and soul formed like the heart and soul of Jesus, so that over the long haul, we are able to follow Jesus where Jesus is leading, and have a heart that is a heart like Jesus and a life that is a life like Jesus as we follow him. Okay, that's pretty much what I have for you today. But since, you know, it's a smaller group, and although a number are on Zoom, a smaller group present, I'll just open the door a little bit. Do any of you want to ask any questions or make any observations about this? I know. Yes?
Yeah, I think this is really important stuff, and I'm impressed by the word anxiety.
Okay. Yeah.
Because while it's personal too, it's also global. We're in a state of anxiety.
Yeah.
And anxiety doesn't lead to wisdom. Anxiety leads to trying to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And so I like that it says here, his mom treasured all these things in her heart, so she knows she took it to heart. And it says, Jesus increased in wisdom and in favor in the divine and human. And I think that's the goal, is to have God's wisdom for the situation that you're in and the anxiety.
Yeah.
And we are not going to be getting out of this anxiety issue right now for a while. Mm-hmm. So how do we want to live?
Right.
And
excellent observation. So. Absolutely. Very good. Okay. That's great. Questions for Carol? All right.
Yeah, I do.
Okay, right.
You say it globally, but it
it's individual. It's, it yeah. doesn't help yeah. that yeah. it is globally, because yeah. we might seek God in all of this, but the other guy isn't.
Yeah, so we pray about that.
That's
right. Right.
It's all of us.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent observation. Yeah, we can't control the other guy. Right. And we're in this place. So how do we individually, excellent point, Richard. How do we individually become more like Jesus in whatever situation that we're in? And that's where we suggest the habits that connect instead of looking for the answer. Look, you can look for the answer, but get the habit that connects. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, yeah. Right, wonderful suggestion, Libby. The more you are able to become like Jesus, the more you know what your habit, your reaction, your responses are, and the more you're able to have Jesus transform you, the more you will be able to listen and hear another person, especially if they're not like you. And the less you connect to the presence of God, the less you will be able to hear what's going on with the other person, generally speaking. Yeah. This side of the room? No? Okay. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. That wonderful time this morning. I appreciate it. Would you please stand? Let's confess our faith in the words of the Nicene Creed. We believe.